This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
You know, it was kind of a slow news week this week, don't you guys?
It was very dry.
Nothing happened at all. Like, absolutely nothing. No. Earlier this week, maybe if you haven't heard, well, then you should probably do something with your life. I don't know. Some people were surprised. Some people I bet are surprised, like on a Thursday, being like, really, that happened?
Yeah.
There was a document leaked from the Supreme Court written by Alito, who basically it's overturning Roe v. Wade, which is what gives access to abortion in the United States, basically. The 1973 Supreme Court case that gave access to abortion in the United States. And now the question is, because many of the things that Alito wrote in this leaked document could set up a precedent for impacting the LGBTQ community in lots of ways. Of course, LGBTQ community, they are impacted by the get abortion because people can get abortions. But also, what does this mean for marriage? What does this mean for, you know, same thing? I mean, in Biden's response,
other social contentious issues that have been resolved by the Supreme Court.
Literally, in the case that the Supreme Court decision that was leaked for, the Biden administration talks about same-sex intimacy and how overturning something like this will impact same-sex intimacy. And that's
Lawrence
a big
issue.
Texas.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things that could be impacted. I'll give my take because personally, I don't think this will impact sort of at least same-sex marriage in a direct way.
Well, let me first say, I don't care about your take, but go ahead. All right, go ahead.
Just because, so fundamentally, the decision, if you read it, and there's a great New York Times article that sort of lays it all out, but that fundamentally, Alito's decision comes down to that the fetus is a life. And in these other instances of same-sex marriage, et cetera, it doesn't come down to a life being quote unquote lost. And that's the decision. That said, he uses many of the fundamentals and Sotomayor says this in sort of the back and forth with this case that they were hearing, that the fundamentals of these other decisions also were rooted in the Roe v. Wade decision. So it's a gray issue that if these five Supreme Court justices who are conservative, three of them appointed by Trump, if they want to really cause havoc, they could easily go back and hear some of these cases that they surely will be brought to the Supreme Court very soon.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think everyone, I want to throw out that like the news was horrific this week, but the decision has not been released yet. And the decision is not official until it is released.
And it could change.
It absolutely could change.
Unlikely to change, but it could.
Feels unlikely. Yes. So, you know, I do want to preface by saying that, but like, I do think that, you know, I don't personally go down the road of the court suddenly kind of wantonly just taking up any number of cases, in particular cases like Lawrence v. Texas that legalize sodomy nationwide. Like, I just don't think there's a palate, even amongst several of the conservatives, to be taking those kind of cases. So I don't think this is the kind of thing that LGBTQIU people should be profoundly concerned about. But at the same time, I don't want to be flippant or dismissive of what would ultimately be the most consequential Supreme Court decision in 50 years. And it is disturbing. It's disturbing that, like, you know, that you have justices that are willing to make those kind of like extraordinarily impactful decisions, you know, based off of sort of, I think, sort of like abstract intellectual debates over what the role of the court is when you're like, yeah, but we, you know, we have this law, we have this decision, Roe v. Wade, that is sort of maintained stasis in the country for the last 50 years. And yeah, so I don't know. Anyway, obviously,
so much of Alito's decision, so much of Alito's decision, or at least brief, makes zero sense in terms of, he's saying that, you know, like, literally he says nothing in this opinion should be understood to cast doubt on precedents that do not concern abortion. Yet examples that he cites are examples that didn't exist in when the Constitution started. So that, yeah, so many of the examples that the reason why marriage, sodomy, et cetera, so many, Roe v. Wade, were decided upon are because of decisions within the Constitution that came later, and amendment, yeah, to the Constitution. And so he's an idiot.
You know, it's tough. I mean, I think Alito and Thomas are obviously, I think, just so wildly out of touch with even like mainstream conservative America. I think they're really that unhinged.
And they have a bone to pick for the Lawrence v. Texas one. They hate that decision, and they've been very outspoken about why they think it's a poor decision.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, Elliot, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, as this has progressed and become obviously more of a hot button topic, there have been a lot of like, well, if first this, then what about gay marriage? And while that is true, and of course scary for a lot of people, and especially like the queer community, I'm also like, this feels scarier to me. Abortion rights feels scarier to me. And I feel like it's a moment to really focus on that and not necessarily pivot to, and I'm not saying, I'm just saying, like, that's what I feel like I've been seeing in the media, you know. If this, then what about that? And I'm like, well, let's focus on the really scary thing that's pressing right now, which is women's autonomy with their own bodies.
Like, I agree. I went to a protest on, I think it was Tuesday night, right here downtown, and I didn't know how protests work, but they're just like open mics, anyone can talk. And like, someone kept going up to, like, the organizer kept being like, all right, well, a lot of people want to talk, so Tony, you're next. And like, Tony would go up and he's like, I'm a janitor. And I, you know, you're like, what is this guy doing? But it was so funny how, like, to me, I was like, I'm here for one reason and one reason only, is because this is too far. I think this is wrong. Well, people kept being like, this is about labor unions. And you're like, no, it's not. It's not. I agree. I love unions, but like, let's focus on abortion and women's rights.
I think they are. I think just to give a different take on that, I do think this decision is so emblematic of so many other decisions that have impacted marginalized communities in the United States since 1973. Mm-hmm. It has been the cornerstone of civil rights fights in the United States since 1973. And so every single marginalized community and sort of force out there is impacted and cares about this decision. And they look to this decision and how Republican judges appointed by Republican presidents overturned abortion in the United States, or the restriction of abortion in the United States. And they pointed that decision as precedent to saying why they should do it in other cases, and which has happened in other cases, like same-sex marriage. So I do think that other groups, like, for example, labor, abortion impacts labor in a way now that we're seeing, in that if certain states ban abortion, like will happen if this decision goes through, well, then corporations will need to step in, and labor unions will need to step in and pay for the health care that women need to receive, or that people who get pregnant are able to receive, to then travel out of state, which is a very cost prohibitive procedure to do, to fly them to a state that will then give them the abortion and the recovery time that they need for that abortion. And so it does impact the labor union. It does impact marginalized communities and lots of different people. And it will be a huge, huge, huge disruptor, not just to quote unquote women. It'll be a huge disruptor in so many people's lives.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with that. And that's an eloquent point, you know, oddly for the first time in your life, Alan.
Not even joking.
Okay, we are here with Allison Leiby. Allison, comedian, actress. I'm going to go ahead and say monologist.
Nice.
That's like another word that I would walk away from someone in a conversation, actually.
Yeah. Monologist?
Monologist, because it sounds like someone's trying to be smart. You know
what I mean? I'm using it to describe Allison because she has a woman show.
And where you do an amazing, amazing monologue, story-driven, stand-up. Yes. That's amazing. I just think the word is weird.
The word, yes. I fully, fully agree.
Well, your show is called Oh God, a Show About Abortion. Mm-hmm. And it's playing at the Cherry Lane Theater in New York. And I was lucky enough to get to see it in previews last week.
It was such a and treat this to was see you.
It was a dream. And I put it to you to answer, but what could possibly be better timing, better timed?
Yeah,
truly.
The abortion.
You should fire your publicist because you don't even need it.
She was like, we were talking the other day and she was like, you know, I've been reaching out about this for a long time and trying to set up a lot of press and it's been like, okay. And she was like, this week, like, is the most intense week I've ever had.
I can only imagine. Yeah, why don't you talk about it?
Yeah, she's like, silver lining to abortion being overturned. It's really going to help your career.
Yeah, like really. The show is popping at the cost of, you know, human civil liberties.
Right.
So that's kind of devastating. I know it's like every day is like a different weird, like emotional journey to go on because like I am, of course, absolutely happy that the show is doing well because I have been working on it for years and I love it and it's really important to me and it's great. But like, would I trade it all so that this wasn't happening? Absolutely.
Wait, so what was like, well, what's the basis of the show? Like, tell people about the show.
So the show is pretty much as advertised. It's a show about abortion. I tell kind of the story of
you
my own.
You don't disappoint.
I do not. Nope. There is actually abortion in it. I tell just kind of the story of my abortion experience and frame it up around kind of how we talk about motherhood in our society and how like so fitting to be recording this on Mother's Day. And how, you know, female identity is often so tied up in motherhood in a way that just is not for men and their parenting identities. So it's definitely like it's I'm excited to do it tomorrow on the heels of Mother's Day and see how people are feeling. But it's like weirdly light and fun. Would you agree,
Elliot? I was gonna say the show, like that's what's special about the show is that, you know, you're talking about women's health, you're talking about, you know, what can potentially be an earth-shattering experience, but you talk about it from your perspective, which is that it was a medical procedure. And and as it should be, it is literally anybody, you know, your experience is your experience. Yours is, of course, the basis of the show. But it is really, in my opinion, just really well done in that you set it up to the standards of how you wanted to deal with it. And in doing so, it doesn't really give the audience a chance to protest, which is good. But I will quote the New York Times as saying,
Quit bragging.
Allison's offhandedness is part of her charm, but it has a purpose. Leiby wants to give us a portrait of abortion, not as a crisis or a moral question, but as a common and confusing medical procedure. Her offhandedness is part of the charm, but it has a purpose. And that's exactly what that's what makes, I think, the show really special. Especially in the light of, you know, right, Roe v. Wade being, you know, overturned potentially. Your approach is really special.
Yeah. And I just, you know, in putting it together, I was just, you know, I'm a stand up who talks about her life. So like, I'm just going to talk about what happens to me. Yeah. This happened to me. But I feel like the representations of abortion in pop culture are so intense and usually, like even the arguments that we use in like fighting for protecting those rights is always focused on the tragedies, the horrors, the worst versions. And I'm like, I think it's also important to show that it's just like, I like, I mean, it's not in the show, but like I had two root canals that month too. And those were like so much more traumatizing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Physically and emotionally.
It's so true though. I mean, I did this like show for Newsweek and we talked about the history of abortion on television. And we had a TV historian on to talk about sort of a very special episode of it all of abortion.
Yeah.
That, you know, even comedies that tackle abortion, it becomes a serious episode. Whereas like, I was telling this to Elliot last night, like, whereas when men have like a health problem, like on The Cosby Show, for example, which take Bill Cosby away from it. But when Bill Cosby,
and
what was his wife's name on the show? Felicia Rashad's character's name?
Felicia Rashad.
Claire. When Claire would always be like, you shouldn't eat the hoagies. And it was like, no, heart health is a very important topic that you should take very seriously in men of that age. But yet it becomes a hoagie joke. But when Maude gets an abortion, like a very special episode. And it's Maude getting an abortion, which is absurd in and of itself.
Yeah. She's like 70.
Yeah. Insane. Insane. But I mean,
I agree.
It's wild. So it's amazing. Yeah. Like, have you seen the conversations, like what kind of conversations have you been having with people after your shows? They must be interesting.
And on top of that, I mean, I also just what reactions do you, because we were talking about this, but what reactions do you get? And are they similar night after night? Are they different?
And on top of that,
sorry.
You guys just keep going till the end of the episode. Just keep adding.
How old are you and where are you from? And what's the credit card number?
As someone who's had her identity stolen twice, I like can't.
right.
Again, way more invasive than my abortion experience. Mm. I've had like, I think that everyone who sees the show, who I interact with after the show, who has had an abortion, has told me about it. Mm-hmm. Which is like, and the thrust of the show, and the only real kind of like statement I make is like, just talk about abortion more, because we only talk about it in moments of crisis.
Yeah.
And everybody comes up and they're just like, I had one too. Thank you for saying all of this. And like, and like, some people have like incredibly like heartfelt moments about it. And some are just like, oh my God. Yeah. That whole thing is really annoying when they do those questions, like, you know, and then some people are like, yes, finally, like my experience feels reflected for the first time in a way that it never is in
pop
culture. I would say the first week, everybody was like, oh, this is great. What a cool show. We really love it. And then Tuesday, it was like, I cried like twice during the show. It was just like super, like, or like got up to the edge of crying and then was like, you're a professional. We have my shit together a little bit.
The Annette Bening, you slap yourself like American Beauty style.
Yes.
What a good picture that is.
Yes. It's definitely been like more intense in the last few days.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to ask, so abortion is a really interesting social issue because sort of anecdotally, I haven't seen the stats on how it breaks down. I do think you'd be surprised, and perhaps you can tell me if you've found this reflected in the audience that comes to your show, even in New York City. You'd be surprised. I think that there are lots of people in rural conservative settings who believe in abortion. And I think you'd be surprised that there's a number of urbanites in, you know, big Democrat strongholds that are pro-life. And
totally.
And I remember when I was in college, I took a contemporary moral issues class and I was absolutely shocked. Okay.
The name of that class alone makes my eye roll.
I am done with the podcast. No.
When people complain about colleges, I'm always like, no, it's imp-. And then I think of every class I took and I'm like, no, they're right.
This was a good one. But I remember the abortion issue was shockingly contentious and that there was huge, or not huge swaths, but there was a significant minority of the class at University of Michigan that was pro-life or, you know, wanted to curtail abortion rights to a certain degree. So anyway, go ahead, Allison.
What's the question?
Yeah, sorry. The question was like, have you come across pro-life like people have they kind of antagonism or acceptance of you, but people who disagree?
Yeah.
No one who has come to the show, with the exception of, I don't know if you saw it, but a conservative playwright, I think he calls himself, tried to mount a show.
Dean Cain? Because he wrote a play about Trump.
Oh my God. I did not know that.
Yeah, Dean Cain.
I knew he was like a Trumpy.
Yeah, Dean Cain and the woman from the Buffy movie, not the TV show, movie.
Christy Swanson.
They wrote a play about Trump
something.
And yeah, so it might have been playwrights.
I mean, playwrights, I am learning the world of theater a bit. And now that I'm kind of almost in it and I'm just like, wow, what an interesting place this is. But
hi, Billy.
Some guy tried to mount a play to run during mine after he had seen that it was happening. That's called Oh Gosnell, The Truth About Abortion. And it's just truly them reading the court transcripts from that one, like really horrific the guy who performed abortions, and it was like very, very terrible.
Right.
And they shut it, and like I guess he hadn't like shared the script with like a lot of the production and the theater itself. And then they saw, and they were like, "Oh yeah, no." It was like so horrific because it's like it's the official court transcript of gruesome murders.
Yeah.
And they were like, "This is like not safe to be putting up. We're not going to do this and cancel it." And it's just like, it's so funny that like his show, which like thinks it's be like,
yes,
is the one that gets canceled because
he's
like
pious.
Too, yes. Yeah.
So he saw your show.
So he came the first night. He bought tickets and came and didn't. He didn't bother me. He didn't say anything to anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm like, thanks for the cash, bro.
Yeah. Right.
Wow.
But no one who's come and seen the show, I've received like no. Like, it's almost like worry somehow. I've received like no negative feedback. I think that people aren't going to come see it if they lightly disagree. Like, they'll be like, I'll just pass. And I haven't had like, we kind of keep tabs online of like, if anybody's like trying to mobilize to get a big group of people who disagree with me there, which hasn't happened. But I don't know, here and there, like some stranger will comment on Instagram and be like, you're a murderer. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
It's interesting though, to what Brent was talking about, how contentious the class was. I'm finding that like for me, for example, I had a good friend who had an abortion, and it was through an act of trauma that she had the abortion. And so sometimes I will admit it is, I do believe it is a medical procedure that should be treated as a medical procedure. And there shouldn't be a lot of, you know, pent up emotion put onto something that would be a typical medical procedure. But I also think of my friend who, of course, you know, had an abortion as an effect of a traumatic situation. And
yeah,
I'm realizing that I need to put the emotion on the traumatic situation that put her into the situation where she needed the medical treatment. But I will admit that part of me, as a you know, a cis male person who cannot get pregnant, that I am conflicted about sort of taking it casually in her situation because she didn't take it casually. You know what I mean?
And totally.
I want to respect her narrative of that. So it's how do you handle that kind of conversation?
I try and make room in the show for like the fact that this is just the smoothest, best version of this story, and that I do not, I have no interest in like negating other people's or erasing other people's trauma. Like abortion is like the only medical procedure that you can have from like a crime or abuse or anything like that. Like it's definitely like, it gets so tied up.
Probably the most common.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't have to go through chemo because like you were the victim of a crime necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like that isn't as tied.
Exactly.
I would think that I would hope that people who do have trauma associated with their experiences, either would not see the show if that would cause them more trauma.
Of course.
Or would see that I want more narratives about abortion, not less. And I want mine to be included in that. But I also like those traumatic and dramatic depictions of it are also important because those are also extremely real. And if
it's interesting,
you know, do more than everybody, there's space for everybody's
more
conversation.
It's like being out, you know, the more people who are out, the more conversations you have, good and bad. It's like, I can make fun of the It Gets Better coming out story just as much as I can make fun of like the boring out coming out story that I had that nobody cared because I've been a faggot my whole life. So
you have, it's true. Ellie, go ahead.
Conversations.
I was going to say, I think what's interesting too is that, you know, I mean, first and foremost, I think it's important to say that it beyond just abortion, the way you talk in the show about not just reproductive rights, but just birth control, the way you talk about birth control in a very factual, casual way is in and of itself important because I feel like as a man, not as a gay man, just as a man, I'm not taught, you know, I'm really not taught about the basic parts of like women's health and women's
or even anatomy.
Anatomy, yeah. That's what I mean. Like, you're not even taught that. And so, like, I'm glad that you talked about it, because it should be, it really should be a casual thing that men know about, because it just should be. And I love that that's a part of the show. And I think when it, in terms of hitting this podcast, there's something that the three of us always have always bumped on as friends, is when gay guys talk about women with a misogynistic take where they think they're being cute in talking about how gross a vagina is or something like that.
We right. also and, think they're gross.
right. And I think anal sex is, and I think anal sex is repulsive, but I'm still gay. Like, here we are.
I'm just saying it's just great to hear you talk about it in a way that is casual, and there's no need to argue it or argue about its relevance or it just is talking about something that just is really helpful.
Yeah, thank you. That's like definitely how I approached like a lot of those like chunks, and like there's a whole bit in the show that just about periods, which there was one night that I missed it, and I hope for you that wasn't that night. You heard
no, you talked about jokes. Periods.
Cool. And like, and just like, I'm like, we're not even allowed to talk about our periods. Like,
insane. It's, you know what you said? The perfect analogy was when you said that it's, and this is crazy, that women have to call in sick to work to their female boss and make up an excuse about why they're sick. Yes. And it's like, that is when you have PMS or when you're,
when you have your period and you're like, I have a bug. And it's like, what? That's why can't I just say it?
It reminds me of that. There was Alan, of course, you'll know this intimately. Because Alan had sex with this guy who ran for Senate. No, there was a guy who ran for Senate in Missouri named Todd Akin. And he very famously made some outlandish comments about, quote, legitimate rape. Yes. That was a joke because I said intimately. But the other thing that I kind of slid under the radar from his quote, and I still watch it like every few months because it's like such an absolute like disaster of an interview, was that he basically says, you know, he's like, I've talked to doctors before, and if it really is a quote, legitimate rape, the human body has ways to kind of shut that whole thing down.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking how oddly like crazily disconnected and almost disgusted he is by saying shut that whole thing down.
He's disgusted. And
that's a medical term. He knows doctors.
Right. And that's exactly it. He's disgusted by the female body. And I just remember finding that such an odd, I mean, appointed and intentional, but odd choice of words. And I think it goes to your point, Allison, which is like, there's not only discomfort, there's also sort of contempt for the female reproductive system, I suppose, or however you want to phrase that.
A friend of mine had tweeted something the other day, like obviously that's all anybody's talking about on the internet, it feels like, is like Roe v. Wade and hellscapes. And she was like, my boyfriend thought that every woman got her period on the 15th of the month until he was 26.
Yeah.
And it's like,
oh my God.
And it's wow. And then it was just a million people in the comments also saying stupid things that men they knew didn't understand or thought about female anatomy or periods or our bodies. And it's just like, the gap in knowledge is so big.
But it also, it makes me, in a weird, small way, like not empathetic, because I mean, I can relate to, I honestly, legitimately, until I was probably in my early 20s, did not know where women peed from.
Oh, me too. I was just gonna say that.
I had no idea, because I had learned somewhere that the clit was in the evolution process, potentially could shift into being sort of like the boy, the penis. And so like I assume
this is literally
where like my knowledge formed from, but because I never, and I feel like I'm a smart person, and I never even got that. And so I think a lot of men are in that boat. You know what I mean? Brent thought they peed through their butts. Like
I didn't think they peed through their butts.
Sure, Brent, backpedaling.
I'm with you 100%. Go ahead, Allison.
No, I'm just agreeing.
Go. Yeah. I had a disagreement. Oh, this is a this is this is really absurd and embarrassing. I had a disagreement with a very good friend of mine many years ago where I was like, if a woman really needed to drink and she sat down in a tub of water, she would like, water would absorb into her vagina. And my friend was like, that is not true.
I have to ask, was your friend a woman?
My friend was a woman. That's right. Oh. Yeah. Look, I'm not saying I was teaching that at an anatomy class. I'm just saying I thought, like, you know, that there's a world in which you, I mean, maybe you could absorb something.
You thought women were plants.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Also, what's the scenario where I can't have a drink of water, but I can get in a bath?
Look, Allison, it's a great question. There's a lot of hypotheticals that float around in my head, and not all of them make perfect sense.
Am I like a hostage in this sense?
You are. You're a pampered luxury hostage.
It shows you how, like, you know, I mean, Brent's going to love that I'm going to say this, but how patriarchal, like, even our societies that we as men are able to glide by without ever having a literal understanding of how a body works. And it's just accepted. And then when we admit to not knowing, or we, you know, say something about like how it might work, then it just sort of becomes like the hoagie conversation. It's a comedy thing, when in reality, it should be like, no, this is actually a tragedy.
Yes.
This is a problem. It's a big problem.
And like, women are taught, like, from when we're young, like, not to to feel shame about our bodies and what they do. And like, so of course, like, girls and women are not like, hey, let me like clear all this up for you. Here's what happens when blood falls out of my vagina.
Yeah.
Like, no one wants to have that conversation. But at the same time, it's like, well, then who is?
And who's going to tell? It really is truly bananas, especially when we all come from women. We all are birthed from women. And it's astounding to think that somehow, I mean, it's no different to me from the salary gap. Like, it is still mind-boggling that we live in a society where women and men are paid differently for the same job. That feels like it should be so archaic and such a joke and in the past by now, and yet it still exists. It's absolutely mind-boggling.
I do think, though, just as, because this, we are, you know, the three of us are all queer, we should acknowledge that it isn't only women who give birth, that the gender is a spectrum, and that us applying the male and female terms
things.
Just so that there's an understanding. Brent's making fun of me right now through his face. I can see.
I had to write a part of my show to include that
I think it's important
language as well, to be like, look, like, I'm saying woman, when I'm saying woman here, like, I'm usually talking about this, but I'm also kind of anybody who connects to it and whatever that identity is.
Anyone
like,
who is able to have a child, or who is able to have an abortion, or if the decision goes through, who will be dramatically impacted if they cannot have an abortion. Yeah.
Medical term is a pussy, Alan. It's called a pussy.
That's right. That's right.
Allison, what do you hope for the show? What could we hope for you?
I mean, I want it to run for a long time. I would love to like get to, right now it's a 6-week run. I hope that it gets extended or picked up again or whatever that looks like. And I hope one day that it's on tape, available on a streaming service that pays me appropriately. I just like want what, you know, so many people have been messaging me. They're like, how could I stream this? And I'm like, I don't know. I would need a deal to close soon. But like, people are like, I want to stream it. Like, when is it going to be? Is this going to be on TV one day? Like, bring it to Detroit, take it here. And I'm like, yeah. People like outside New York really want to see it. So I'm hoping that they can.
Yeah,
that would be my goal.
Absolutely,
for sure.
And then at some point, that I won't be the abortion lady anymore, which I think I'm going to be for a while.
Yeah, of course.
You will be for a while. That's okay.
Now's the time. Yeah.
For what it's worth, I've always thought of you, though, Allison.
Thank you. And yes, that is the correct response.
Way, way, way before the show.
Yeah, before I even had my abortion. Like, you're just the abortion lady.
Well, when I met you, I was like, that's the abortion lady. Yeah.
Well, the show is called Oh God, a Show About Abortion. It's at the Cherry Lane Theater in New York. And Allison, thank you so much for being here. Where can people follow you and find you and find the show online?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Allison Leiby. And the show also has an account, too, that at Oh God Show. Which I really like how that all ended up. Like, previously the show was called Oh God, an Hour About Abortion. And when I went to Cherry Lane, they were like, we need to change the title. And I was like, I really want the word abortion to stay in it. I'm not trying to trick people into seeing the show. And they're like, yeah. No, our is just so stand-up-y. Like, we don't want to alienate theater people. And I was our was so the word funny. That was a problem, but like truncated to.
It's really funny.
Oh God show, which I think is very fun. Is so there's fun. An Instagram and a Twitter account for that, that updates with like yeah. ticket info. And
you might get a lot of really sort of confused Christians coming your way as well.
I mm-hmm. was hoping if I'm going to trick God anybody, willing. It's going to be a Christian.
God willing. And that's Leiby, L-E-I-B-Y.
And another thing.
All right, so an article in Elliot's favorite online journal, Dazed Digital.
Where did you find that? How did you come across Dazed Digital?
I love how we shit on Elliot for finding all the articles we talk about, but it is still kind of fun to be like, what is your like blog repertoire?
Yeah. Do you still use point, RSS feeds?
No, not at all. Once I didn't have to work on the internet anymore, I stopped using them completely. But I subscribe to some like those newsletters. What are they called? Substacks?
Sure.
And one of and just by some people who like have really interesting links to stuff about all different parts of life, and yeah. one of them is this.
Firefox usually curates a pretty good feed when you like open up the browser. It always chooses like 8 or 10 articles that like are like maximum click worthy for me.
Yeah.
And then you click the article and that's absolute drivel. But anyway, so Elliot, so this article talks about what it's like to have a partner who isn't on social media. So offline people, so what some of the benefits are offline people can snap their quote online partners back into reality by reminding them how trivial some of the interactions that we have online are. We're also attracted to what being offline signifies, which is living a life without the constant pursuit of external validation. And I have my own bones to pick with the article, but it was, which I'll elaborate on in a minute, but it was definitely an interesting thing because I'm definitely not offline, but I'm largely anti-social media at this point.
Really
and
are.
I don't really use it at all or engage with it whatsoever, except for when Elliot sends me things that make me mad about someone posting something on social media. But you guys are much more ingrained in it. So what were your thoughts on this?
I can't help but agree that it's like, there is something so attractive to like the privacy of somebody who chooses. Look, I've said many times, like if I weren't in this bizarre position of trying to gain attention while also
right.
loving privacy to a certain degree, I would probably be very private and not so much online. But I can't help but find there to be such a sexiness about somebody who doesn't feel like they need to have yeah. that, you know, even like yeah. somebody who's not a performer, just they yeah. don't, they a more analog life can be really attractive, but I also don't by any means judge, you know, I don't judge because I'm doing the same thing.
Oh, I definitely judge.
I mean, the more someone seeks out attention on their platform, you know, the more douche chills I will certainly get.
Yeah.
Although I don't think, I don't think you have to, I can apply like, you know, like a system of right or wrong or better or worse to how much somebody is online. It's really about like how thirsty they are.
The thirst part will definitely be a deal breaker. If someone's not on social media, like at all, like they don't have a digital footprint at all, I probably would never even wind up getting with them because I think they're
both. You won't even fuck them? You won't fuck someone, Alan. Right now, you would not fuck someone.
Well, no. I mean, it's kind of like, what are you hiding? Like, what's so, like, you don't even have one about, like, just your dog? Like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
I get that.
Sunset and call it a basic, day. You don't need to do it for attention. But, like, because social media is now, it's no longer just a promotional tool. It is literally a means of people just having an online presence. And I think we as sort of like comedians, writers, artists, that we can see that, okay, what we put online is a curated front, which is how I treat my social media. It's a curated front of just humor and stuff.
Your insanity.
It's my insanity. It's not necessarily sort of like who I am, I don't think at all. And that's what I love about drag is that I'm just putting out a fantasy of a fully edited picture and just have fun with it, guys. But I will say I am, I mean, Michael largely is like Brent in that he of course has an internet or has Instagram, but he doesn't ever post anything. He doesn't ever, he posts nothing to his stories. He posts zero updates. But he uses Instagram all the goddamn time. He's always like looking at stuff and sharing stuff, but he's not posting anything. He's not engaging in any way. And I don't know. I don't know what I think about it. It doesn't turn me on or off one way or the other, really, in that respect.
Well, this is what I was going to say about the article. So I found this article actually a little depressing because it seems to presuppose that most people are always and constantly on social media. And I think that's, I think in certain industries, especially journalism, especially entertainment, everyone I know spends a lot of time on social media.
Yeah.
Everyone I know within entertainment, everyone I know who is not in entertainment, you know, uses it fleetingly at absolute best.
Yes, I agree.
And I've also noticed, you know, that like, you know, the busier you are, like when I have a slow week versus a very busy week, when I'm really busy, I don't spend any fucking time scrolling or looking at any of this trash. And that's most people because they have jobs that require them to be working 40 plus hours a week. They have children that require attention and food and all these things. So like, there's just some, like when I read articles like this, I'm like, oh, this to me screams of like a 28-year-old who uses Twitter a lot and has curated a bubble of people who use Twitter and has no idea that Twitter is used by like 2% of the population daily basis.
Twitter is the least used social platform out of like Instagram, Facebook. And when Elon Musk was the whole buying things happening, they talk about that, how like profitably it's not the social media you'd want to buy. You want to buy Instagram.
Exactly. So, but I did pull a couple of stats that I thought were kind of interesting. You know, obviously I'm obviously not arguing that social media isn't like a profound force in our life, but like 60% of Instagram users log in just daily. Most of them log in for 3 minutes per session.
Really?
More than half of Twitter users log in a couple times a week or less. And like this article, like goes through like, oh, you know, what a novel thing when you meet someone who doesn't know and they rattle off all these fucking dumbass memes and you're like, yeah, most people don't know what these dumbass memes are. There was something just like oddly arrogant about how this was written, that bothered me.
Yeah. I think I don't think you're off on that. And I think like the real world, you know, when push comes to shove, it's not that people aren't online. It's that I don't think people take it as literally. I don't think people combine reality and digital experience as much as media and people who have to be online for a living think you do.
Yeah.
I think maybe kids do, you know. I have friends who are like, I have a friend who's a teacher who I saw recently who was telling me that all his students, there's like essentially, MSN. There's literally like no, there's barely a line between TikTok and their reality.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
And that to me makes sense and is also just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it completely blurs the line between reality and fiction and really does, I think.
Well, I think the same can be said for our generation in terms of growing up with like, not growing up, but like in our adult sort of years using like Instagram or YouTube, you know, Instagram blurs a reality that is completely false. Uses filters to blur reality.
But that is horrible.
but people, I feel like people maybe not people our age, but like-minded people like us are very aware that that is a show, that it's a front, that it's false, that it that it's bad for your brain. Whereas kids are kids, and they just, although I think they are much more adept and aware and smarter than we probably were as teenagers, they still are so addicted to it.
So I know we rag on social media a lot in this podcast, but I did want to throw out the story that actually just happened on Friday. Alan, would you like to stop texting and listen to my story?
I'm looking at my I'm looking at my usage. I was trying to find my screen time just how much I use my phone.
Alan had been looking down for like 5 minutes. I'm like, sorry, I'm boring you, Alan. Yeah.
I mean, I could actually do real-time results in terms of this story and how much we're... I use my phone 5 hours and 45 minutes a day and Instagram for 58 minutes a day. On average.
Yeah, I use Instagram on my browzer, so I don't know. But anyway, I had a friend. Really? I, yeah, I don't have it on my phone.
Do you use your browser's phone to look at Instagram? Like the browser on your phone?
No, I use the browser on my computer, and I don't look at Instagram when I'm out with just my phone.
Interesting.
Yeah, you should try it, Alan.
I won't.
So I was with a friend of our the three of ours, a dear friend who will remain anonymous. But this person has very famously undergone an incredible body transformation within the last 5 years. I mean, this person is a successful person, but this body transformation literally led to him like being featured on like magazines about men's health. That is how kind of fit and healthy this guy is. And yet he told me on Friday that he had to start unfollowing dozens of like bodybuilding accounts and like sort of like, you know, accounts that he had found some inspiration from when he started working out very seriously, because he said it started making me feel awful about myself. This is a guy who was on the cover of Men's Health, and he's telling me, I can't, Instagram gives me body image issues. And yes, I just find that just profoundly depressing and disturbing, especially for you. Not at all. I can't even look at myself, because I spend even the time that I do spend on Instagram looking at people who look 50 times better than me.
I mean, I think it's a real, I mean, every time I post a drag photo, I probably get a number of responses of people just calling me fat or putting a pig emoji on it. And it's just, you know, it is what it is. It's just, I mean, it doesn't really impact me necessarily, but it definitely hits. You get it.
Yeah. And by the way, that's fantastic that it doesn't impact you. And I think it's a testament to your character. But I think for lots of people like myself,
it's hard.
It cuts our soul. And to think that like high schoolers are on this thing, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be per se, but you're just like, it is.
Think about what girls are getting, what little girls are probably getting. Yeah,
it's really scary. I don't know. I mean, I'm an adult. You know, I'm an adult, and I'm well aware that when I read those statistics about Instagram or social media causing depression, you know, causing FOMO, but really causing actual mental illness and anguish,
increase in suicide attempts.
I get it. It's awful. I mean, it makes so much sense to me.
I do think that they would probably do well. There was a conversation maybe before the pandemic where they were talking about getting rid of like likes and getting rid of view numbers and getting rid of the data that often is associated with these things. And they haven't, you can hide your number, like your number account on Instagram. Like that's a thing now, but it still is not necessarily what it should be. Like if you take away the thing that the vanity behind it or that will make you seem cool or whatever.
Yes. I wonder if that would change things.
Yeah.
That's the problem with anything led by Mark Zuckerberg, any modicum of morality that's required, if that cuts into the bottom line, which is if that cuts into your drive to log in and be competitive or keep posting, he will not do it.
Yeah.
So he won't do anything for the betterment of society. Yes.
I mean, I've had friends. I posted a dumb Sex in the City reel like last week or something about some stupid thing. And a legitimate friend of mine was like, whoa, that reel got like 70,000 views or something. And I'm like, does that matter? Right. Like, why are you looking at that number? Just laugh at the joke, bitch. Like, why? Yeah. I don't get.
I know.
Yeah.
Last thing I'll say. There's we've associated for so long, and despite being now decades into social media, we haven't disassociated power with numbers.
Yeah.
And even as numbers continue to grow and grow and grow, we're still like, oh, this person is powerful because this, you know, they show their pubes and they have 40,000 followers. So then if they make a story about voting for Joe Biden, well, then maybe we'll win the election or whatever. Yeah. It's just like, it's meaningless. It's meaningless. But again, that's what they need you to use to keep logging in, because that's what we respond
to. The numbers don't exist. This whole market of influencers that there's literally been a market created around it. People hit, if you have 1 million followers, people will give you money to talk about some bullshit lotion or something. When in reality, it's like, well, but that market, his followers probably don't need that fucking lotion. Like, give it to the girl who has like the devoted fan base of girls who want that lotion. Yeah. You know, none of it makes sense. It's all bullshit.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, would is it attractive to Alan, is it attractive that Michael may be on Instagram but doesn't engage?
I mean,
does it give you an erection is what we're asking, Alan? Does it turn you on?
I think the article is a piece of bullshit for attention. And the point of the article is the whole reason that he's talking about in the thing. It's all about getting attention. It's all about getting people to talk about whatever thing and then click on it. It's all. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess somebody's not reading Days Digital religiously. I'm the only one.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
I just checked my phone. Yesterday, I spent 3 minutes on Instagram and 4 hours and 46 minutes on LinkedIn.
My Aunt Joanne would say, Allison's at the Cherry Lane Theater. That's where I saw Joy Behar.
I saw Joan Rivers there.
Oh, yeah. It's the place. What would your Aunt Anne say about today's show?
She would say, you know what medical procedure I want people to start talking about? Those fat freezing things. Does it work? I need to know if it. I need pictures. People need to talk.
Good question. I want to get a show about cool sculpting.
An entire show about cool sculpting.
It's okay to talk about the cool sculpting.
That's right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Elliot
Glazer. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Elliot Glazer.
No, you're not, you jerk.
I am.
How dare you?
I'm going to abort you from this podcast. Muting.
How dare you. Oh, you.
We've descended into chaos.
This bitch hates when we descend into chaos. Every time we do this, next time I see him, he takes my head, he bashes it against the wall. He's abusive.